Minutes Tuned to Yesterday, delivering programs from the golden age of radio. Welcome, I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Science fiction in this hour. Later on, a story set in 1990 on X-1, but right now it's 2000+, with the tale The Insect. This Mutual Broadcasting System episode heard on May 17th, 1950.
The received word of a strange invention. What it can do will amaze science and strike terror to the world.
2000+. Science fiction adventures from the world of tomorrow, the years beyond 2000 A.D. 2000+ presents The Insect.
It's wonderful news, darling. It means I'll probably get that research appointment at the university.
Oh, I can hardly believe it, George.
Well, here's the telegraph from the Dean of Science himself. I'll take the jet plane in about 2 hours and be there in plenty of time for my meeting this afternoon.
I know. I'll get a bottle of champagne and we'll celebrate a dinner tonight.
Well, that's nice, but I'm not sure I'll be home for dinner.
Oh?
The meeting may go on. Maybe I'll have to stay overnight, take the plane back in the morning.
Well, then we'll have champagne for breakfast.
Well, let's not hope too much. Hey, I've got to gather my papers and things while I'm going to get to the airport in time. You'd better help me.
In your laboratory?
Oh, now, look. The wife of a budding scientific genius shouldn't act like that.
But, George, I'm frightened when I go in there.
Nonsense. They won't hurt you.
You know I can't stand insects. That's why I stay out of your lab.
I've got to have help with these papers. What do you want me to do, cancel the meeting because my wife is afraid of the work I do?
Oh, I'm sorry, darling. It's... Just...
All right. I'll try to do it myself.
Don't be angry, George. If they were ordinary insects, tiny ones were... Maybe it would be different.
Even with what I've done to them, they're not so big. So I've taken a spider, a housefly, and a wasp, and by means of my growth ray, I've made them larger. The spider still isn't any bigger than my fist. The housefly is about as large as a pack of cigarettes. The wasp no bigger than a golf ball. They're not giants.
But they look so... So horrible when they're even that big.
Easier to observe and study. That's why the university is interested in my work. With a long-term appointment and a grant to amplify the growth ray, maybe I can really increase the size of the insect. Imagine a fly as big as a horse. That would be some horsefly. Hey, that's a joke.
All right, George. I'll help you.
It's only the papers we're packing. You won't have to go near the insect cages. Now, hand me those poisonous insects. That one there.
A fidget?
Right.
Do you have any poisonous ones in here now?
Only Sam, the spider. He's in the glass cage by those books.
Oh, I don't want to look.
Maybe if you'd look, you wouldn't have such ridiculous ideas. Sam is a nice guy. He just squats and stares. Looks like a wise old man.
Oh, if I looked, I'd get sick. All those legs... Yes,
okay. Now the notebook, please. Hey, be careful.
Why? Well, what's the matter?
That machine is very delicate. You almost touched it.
Oh, the growth ray?
Uh-huh. I don't want that running while I'm gone.
Oh, don't worry. I can't wait to get out of here.
Let's see now. Have I got everything? Yep. Well, that does it. Come on. After you, meet Tedder, stricken beauty. Now, I hope when we get to the university, if I get the appointment, you'll keep your disgust of insects to yourself. A wife is supposed to build up her husband's work. Faculty-wise, do that all the time.
George, don't argue with me now. I just can't help the way I feel.
Sam should really be fed while I'm gone.
Stop it! I'm not going in there.
All right. What about Pete the housefly? He's not poisonous.
You feed your insects when you get home. Now, hurry up. George will be late.
Sure. Well, goodbye.
Oh, George, I don't want you to leave when you're annoyed like that.
I'm sorry, darling. I really love you. But I love my insects, too.
Mm-hmm.
Mrs. Martin. Here are the groceries you ordered.
Oh, hello, Bill. Right in here.
Okay. On the table?
Please. Well, I hope the oranges are better this time than they were last.
Oh, Mr. Ginkelheimer said to tell you that these oranges are swell.
Well, I'll know when I squeeze them for breakfast. Oh, thank you, Bill.
Oh, is Mr. Martin home?
Mr. Martin? No, he isn't, Bill. Why?
Well, he was going to show me his bugs.
Oh, you don't want to look at them. They're dreadful.
I find them very interesting. Mr. Martin said he'd take me into his lab today. That's why I delivered your order first. I was anxious to see them.
Oh, Mr. Martin was called away suddenly. He got a telegram and had to leave almost at once. But you'll be home tomorrow.
Gee, tomorrow I've got to work at the other store, the one on North Street.
Well, in a few days, then. The bugs will still be here, Bill.
Mrs. Martin, would it be too much trouble if you let me peek at them?
I never go into Mr. Martin's laboratory.
I won't hurt anything. Just peek. I was kind of looking forward to seeing them.
Oh, it's a horrid place, Bill, that laboratory. You wait till Mr. Martin gets home.
Sure, Mrs. Martin, if you say so.
Well, don't look so glum. What you men see in those revolting creatures, I'll never know.
They're scary. They're so big. I feel funny when I look at them. Then Mr. Martin explains about science and stuff, and it's really interesting.
Would you like to be a scientist, Bill?
I sure would.
Well, I suppose I ought to encourage it. I won't take you in, but you can teach. You know where the door is.
Oh, thanks, Mrs. Martin. Thanks very much.
But don't touch anything.
I won't.
I better put these groceries away.
Mrs. Martin, help! Help! Help!
Bill! Bill, what's the matter? Oh! Oh, no. No!
I never saw it before. It wasn't here the last time.
I don't know.
He's 6 feet high.
What is it?
Look at the eyes. The feelers out in front, waving. Wings. It's got wings.
It can fly at us. Kill us. Eat us.
Get out of here.
We must get out of here.
Yeah. Walk back. Keep your eyes on it.
It looks like a moth. A giant moth.
Watch it. If it flies, you...
Oh! You bolted through the door.
Open it. Quick, open it.
I can't. It's locked.
Where's the key?
In the other room. We can't get out.
Looking at it. Oh, it's crying, Mrs. Martin. It isn't doing anything. It's just sitting there, fanning its wings.
Oh, Bill. Bill, what should we do?
I don't know.
Let's move in the corner by that chair. We can crouch down behind it.
We'll just sit here and watch it.
Now, Mr. Martin, I'm very interested in your growth ray. As Dean of Science, I want to be certain that this university encourages brilliant young scholars who are experimenting in new fields of research.
I understand,
At sir. The same time, I must be satisfied that the research will be of fundamental value.
Yes, sir.
Now, suppose you talk for a while. Tell me about your work.
Well, I have always been interested in the effect of environment on organisms. I narrow the environmental factors to universal conditions applicable to all organisms. Mm-hmm. For example, sir... air, temperature, humidity, light, and so forth. And then I approached each of these conditions from the point of view of its specific effects on organisms. I discovered that the presence or absence of light gave me the widest variance of reaction.
Oh, excuse me. In what way the widest variance?
In the effect on physical growth, change, adaptation.
Oh, I see.
You see, sir, because light is a general term, I broke its definition down into all known rays, infrared, ultraviolet, so forth, and studied reactions of organisms to those rays in every conceivable combination.
Mm-hmm.
Now, after 2 years, I evolved a theory that if certain rays could be combined electronically and concentrated on living organisms for specified periods of time, their growth would be greatly stimulated.
And you have constructed such a machine?
Yes, I have. The Electrodyna Spectrum, the growth ray machine.
What have you accomplished with it so far?
I've multiplied the growth of certain insects many times. My present machine is small and homemade, and its power is not too great. But so far, I've increased the size of a fly to that of a pack of cigarettes.
Mm.
The size of a spider to that of my fist.
What kind of spider?
A tarantula.
It's a very dangerous and poisonous insect to work with.
Well, being a tropical spider, it might be more receptive to light. Its size has tripled.
Tell me, Mr. Martin, what is the optimum increase in size that you've so far obtained?
About 8 times with the fly. The size increase varies with the insects. There's a lot of research yet to be done.
Yes, so I can see. Your work certainly excites the imagination. Think of your having the kind of equipment that will permit a 20, 50, 100, or even 1,000-fold increase in an insect's size. Imagine an insect large enough to attack and devour a human being. Imagine this university needing lion cages to contain its giant insects.
Well, there's no limit to what new things we could learn about all manner of organisms with the growth ray. Not just insects.
Yes, that's right. Mr. Martin, I'd like you to stay on another few hours so that we can talk some more.
I'd be very happy to.
Perhaps you'd like to phone your wife, but you'll be a bit late.
Thank you, sir.
You can use the phone in the other office. And Mr. Martin.
Yes?
When she asks you how everything's going, you tell her that it's going just fine.
It's still sitting there, looking at us.
Horrible thing I've ever seen.
6 feet high. Those giant wings. How does it get here, Mrs. Martin?
Somehow the growth ray must have begun working. It gives off a slight glow. The moth must have seen it. Flown toward it.
It must have seen us. Those eyes. The biggest dinner plates. Maybe it's swimming. Then it will come toward us. It'll try to kill us.
Either. Don't, Bill. Don't say that. Crouch down, Lord. This chair protects us.
We've got to get out of here. The door's locked, but isn't there some other way out?
Only the window. Behind the moth.
Is the window locked? I can't see. The shade is drawn.
Yes, the window is locked.
Gosh, if it would only fly to the other corner of the room.
Then what would you do?
Maybe I could run to the window, pull up the shade, unlock the window, get out and get help.
Just leave me alone with that horrible monstrous creature. Oh, no, but
what do we do?
I don't know.
When will Mr. Martin come home?
This afternoon, tonight, maybe not until tomorrow. The phone.
Maybe that's Mr. Martin calling.
Yes.
When you don't answer, maybe he'll come home.
No. No, he'll think I'm out shopping or visiting.
Mrs. Martin, look.
The moth. Stop moving its wings.
Looking right at us. At this corner. I'll bet it hears the telephone. It scares it.
There's no fire. That must be George calling home. Why doesn't he realize something has happened? Why doesn't he call the neighbors or the police? Why doesn't he come home?
Mrs. Martin, I think it's going to fly.
What do we do?
I don't know. It'll kill us.
If it heard the phone, it'll hear us. When it flies, crouch down, Bill. Get as much protection from the chair as possible. And scream. Yell. Anything to make noise.
Okay. Okay, Mrs. Martin.
Oh, the way it just stares.
Maybe it won't fly. It will fly. The phone has stopped ringing.
Yes, Bill. Yes. Let's be quiet.
Like a nightmare being here. George, darling, you know I hated these insects. Yet you built a laboratory in our home. Home. A place with a room of terror. Why am I here? Why did things happen to trap me here? Was it because I hated George's work? Was it because I refused to help him with these repulsive creatures? I see them all. His body's like a worm. Quivering. Rippling. Gray. Dirty. And those eyes. Staring. Knowing I'm here. What's he going to do?
It's flying at us. Scream again. Make noise.
It's flying wildly against the wall, the ceiling, the fireplace, the window.
His wings hit the window shade. It rolls off.
The sunlight's coming in. It's flying blindly, crazy.
What's that?
Bill, the glass cage. The glass cage with the spiders. The poisonous spider.
I see it darting across the floor. Over there by the sofa.
The giant moth is sitting on the bookshelf. And on the floor. Like a fuzzy ball of death. The spider. The tarantula.
Mr. Martin, I am delighted to see you. The dean phoned and said you were coming over. I think I am the last member of the faculty committee he wants you to see. Oh, sit down, won't you?
Thank you, Professor Buckley. Yes, I've been going all afternoon from one appointment to the other.
And all of us are happy to talk with you. The dean is quite excited about your research, you know.
Yes, I'm very pleased about that. Professor Buckley, I hope you won't think me rude at the beginning of our meeting, but I wonder if I might use your phone.
Why, of course, Mr. Martin. Is something wrong?
No, I don't think so, but I phoned my wife several times to tell her I was staying on all afternoon, and there's been no answer.
Oh, I'm sure there's nothing wrong. By all means, call. The phone is right there.
Thank you.
Number, please.
Lakeview 84572, and reverse the charges, please.
Thank you.
Still doesn't seem to be any answer.
Oh, well, let it ring a few more times.
Sorry, sir. There is no answer. Shall I keep trying?
Yes, operator. Please keep trying.
I'll call you, sir.
Thank you. I can't understand it. It's not like Betty to be away so long.
Mrs. Martin?
Yes. Still there.
Saw the spider last week. As big as Mr. Martin's fist. I looked into the glass cage. I could see the hair on its legs. Like bristles. And Mr. Martin showed me its mouth. Where it bites and kills with the poison.
Stop it, Billy! Stop! For heaven's sake, stop!
I'm sorry. Martin, I can't stop looking at them.
They don't like the sunlight. That's why they're on the sofa.
But the whole room is flooded with sunlight since the shade went up.
Hiding in this corner behind this chair doesn't give us the protection we need.
Why? The moth is too big to get at us here.
But the spider, it can scurry on the rug under the chair.
I'll take off my shoes. Something to hit it with if it comes. There. Now you take one of them.
Look, it's
wings are fluttering again.
It's going to fly again.
But let's not scream. It might scare the spider.
Can they hear too?
I don't know.
Here he comes.
Call you back.
Ask for operator 34, sir. Thank you.
No answer yet?
No, sir. Of course, I did tell Betty that I might be late or even stay overnight. She may have gone to her mother's.
Well, it's a real pleasure finding a young man who cares that much for his wife. I suppose Mrs. Martin feels the same way about you.
Oh, Betty's wonderful.
Yes, I'm sure she is. After all, not many women would approve of their husbands inventing machines that make insects larger. You've got a rare wife, Mr. Martin. One who doesn't object to giant insects in the house.
Keep the shoe tight in your hand, Bill. If you see the spider, hit it. It's hard.
Yes, ma'am. I will.
I can't stand it much longer. My hands are trembling. I'm cold all over.
Me too, Mrs. Martin. I think I'm getting to stick.
Oh, you mustn't, Bill.
If I could have a drink of water.
The moth is acting strangely. Hmm?
Yeah. Its feelers are kind of limp.
And its body. Oh, that disgusting worm-like body. Flabby all of a sudden. Drooping.
Its eyes. They look different, too. I don't know why, but somehow they...
Yes, you're right.
Huh?
What's the matter?
Spider! 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 Oh, no. No. It was only the hem of your skirt touching my leg. I thought it was a spider.
Oh, Bill. Bill, what's going to happen to us?
Gosh, Mrs. Martin, don't cry. Please don't cry.
Well, Mr. Martin, are the terms satisfactory to you?
Oh, yes, sir, very much so. Thank you, sir.
It's going to be a great pleasure having you at the university. And I know that you find your association with us a real incentive to carrying on your work with the growth ray.
I'm sure of that. I'll do my very best to be a credit to the university and to scientific research.
Now, my boy, it's time for you to leave if you want to catch the 6:10 and be home to tell your wife. You just get home and you'll find that there's an explanation for why she didn't answer the phone all day.
I'm sure you're right. Thank you again, Dean. Thank you very much.
Feel better now, Mrs. Martin?
I guess so, Bill. I'm all cried out. I haven't a tear left.
Look, Mrs. Martin, I'm going to try to reach the window.
The window?
The moth is back on the couch. I think I can make a run for the window once I push the chair aside a little.
But he might attack you. Or me?
Well, maybe he won't.
Oh, but he will, he will. The moth is so big. 6 feet high. You know, what would happen to either of us if he did attack? I would be eaten alive.
Do they have teeth? Could really kill us?
The moth eats all sorts of things. George would know exactly. I had a whole group of claws ruined last year. It's so big, so terribly big. I'm biting. Oh, Bill, I don't know what to say.
I'm going to try it. I'll crouch down. I'll push the chair out a little, squeeze by between the chair and the wall, and make a dash for the window. Pushed aside. Now, give me my shoes. Okay, now. Mrs. Martin. All right, go.
I'm here. I'll try to unlock the window.
Look out! The moth is flying at you!
Get away! Get away, you! Get away!
Lights are off. Ah, that's better. Where can Betty have gone? Betty! Betty, are you here?
John! John!
Betty, where are you?
In the laboratory!
Good Lord. Locked. It's locked. Where's the key? Here.
George! George,
oh,
darling!
Betty. Oh, my darling.
George! George, it was awful.
Who's that? Betty, for heaven's sake.
Bill, the grocery boy. Killed by that.
Look at that moth. I can't believe it. It's dead. Bill.
What? Oh, Mr. Mark,
you're fine. The glass broke on the floor.
Let's get out of here fast. All right, sit down, Bill.
Oh.
For heaven's sake, what happened? Here, sit down, darling. I'll get you a drink. Here you are.
Thank you.
Now, tell me.
The laboratory door snapped behind us. The giant moth was there. He knocked over the glass cage with the spider. We thought we'd die. And I thought Bill was dead.
I'll find the spider and kill it. But as for the moth, darling, despite its size, you had nothing to fear.
What?
Well, you see, darling, the adult moth doesn't eat. It has no mouth. Nothing to attack or kill with. Despite its size, Trichophaga tapetella, the clothes moth, is utterly harmless.
You mean it? You mean we could have just shooed it away and opened the window?
Of course, dear. The reason it's dead and why you could have waited without worrying is that a moth cannot live more than 6 hours in sunlight. You see, dear, all this horror was unnecessary.
Next week, a strange drama of a silver rocket and an unseen visitor from space. Be sure to listen to 2000 Plus, radio's different series. 2000 Plus is produced by Dreyer and Winolson Productions, Incorporated. In today's cast, Joan Shea portrayed Betty, Larry Robinson was Bill, Ralph Bell was George, and Bill Griffiths was the Dean. Music composed and played by Milton Kaye, sound Al April and George Cooney. Engineer Bob Albrecht, this is Ken Marvin speaking. This program came from New York.
2000 Plus, on Tuned to Yesterday, a Mutual Broadcasting System episode from the 17th of May, 1950. You're listening to an hour of science fiction on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Lefonier. Now, if you were a radio listener in the New York City area at 8 o'clock in the evening on the night of December 26th, 1957, you could have tuned in for Robert Q. Lewis on WCS with the news, The Bill Kemp Show on WABC, or The New York Times News Update on WQXR, or on the NBC affiliate at the time called WRCA, X-1 was on the air, featuring the story Target One.
Countdown for blastoff. X-5, 4, 3, 2, X-1, fire. From the far horizons of the unknown come tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future. Adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on a thousand maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, presents X-1. Tonight, Target One. But first, hear this. The presents have been opened, the gifts enjoyed, and in the case of the kids, a few are already slightly battered. But NBC has one more holiday package for you, and it'll be delivered over this weekend on Monitor. There'll be the music of such bands as those of Guy Lombardo and Richard Maltby, punctuated by the antic commentary of Monitor's own Bob and Ray and Fibber McGee and Molly, and underscored by the up-to-the-minute reports of NBC's newsmen at home and abroad. From Friday night through Sunday midnight, Monitor will bring you another weekend of drama, music, news, and interviews. Of special interest to sports fans will be NBC's coverage of the Friday night fights, Saturday's blue-gray and north-south football games, and Sunday's National Football League championship game. Use and enjoy Monitor, your weekend radio service. Yes, start your weekend right with Monitor on Friday nights and stay with Monitor all weekend long over most of these same NBC stations. Now, X-1 and tonight's story, Target One.
Headquarters of the World Council was in the ruined United Nations building in New York. It took me an hour to reach it, picking my way across the red-colored rubble that had once been a proud city. I was ushered into the office of the president of the council, a former Russian scientist named Melkov. It was hard to realize that only a few decades ago, these people had helped us destroy the world in an atomic war that left less than 100,000 people on the face of the globe.
Come in. Dr. Marin.
Yes.
Good to see you, Doctor.
Sorry I'm 2 days late. I had to land at Boston. It's the only airport operating.
I understand. You have to sit down.
Thank you.
I suppose you are wondering what this is all about.
Very little surprises me, Mr. President.
Good. As you know, Doctor, the Great War of 1960 left very little of the human race. What it did leave, well, 2 billion corpses, 3 continents rotting and unlivable, and every survivor mutating. I believe you yourself have had children who could scarcely be called human. Sorry to be so blunt.
Why did you send for me, Mr. President?
Doctor, suppose I gave you an opportunity to do something extremely practical.
Such as?
A chance to prevent the destruction of our world, which took place 30 years ago.
To prevent what has happened? To stop an atomic war?
Yes. Would you do it?
I'd sell my soul to the devil, Mr. President.
You mean that?
Yes.
Doctor, what would you say was the most important scientific discovery of the 20th century?
I suppose Einstein's equation, E equals mc squared.
Exactly. This formula unlocked the atom. Without it, there would have been no atomic energy, and consequently, no bomb, no war.
The formula did not cause the war, Mr. President, nor did the man who discovered it. He was one of the finest human beings who ever lived. A man utterly dedicated to the pursuit of peace and harmony.
Yes, exactly. That is what will make your task so abhorrent, Doctor.
What is this task, Mr. President?
Quite simply, it is the murder of Albert Einstein.
Are you insane?
Perhaps. Only history will record that.
How in the name of heaven? Albert Einstein died in 1956.
I am well aware of that. In order to commit this murder, Doctor, you will have to travel back in time.
Travel back? You mean that...
I mean that our scientists have succeeded in their experiments. Parachronon penetration has been achieved.
It's fantastic.
Yes, so were atomic energy and rockets to the moon and radio waves long before both of those.
You're actually suggesting that I return to the early 20th century to commit a murder?
Yes.
But why Einstein? Why not the men who took his contributions and twisted them into ghastly inhuman weapons? Why not them?
Because others would replace them. There are many minds so filled with contempt for their own lives that they would be willing to destroy others, so warped with hate that they might even enjoy the job. No. No, it must be Einstein.
Well, then why me? Why not select some murderer, some fiend?
Because you are a man of the highest morality. This task must not be performed by some twisted monster. It must be done by a man of integrity, who fully realizes his responsibility. To do otherwise would be to degrade ourselves and our victim. Come here, to the window. Do you see that covered barge lying in the East River?
Yes.
That barge is the finest laboratory we could assemble. Inside it is the mechanism for complete K-meson penetration, maintaining a stable configuration. In effect, it is a floating time machine.
You've tested it?
It was tested last week. Professor Milton Waxman went back 40 years in time and returned. We cannot afford another test because our energy sources are limited.
Will Waxman accompany me?
Yes. He and one other. Well, Doctor, what is your answer?
All right. I'll do it. That afternoon, I was taken aboard the barge in the East River. I was left alone in the laboratory to wait for Waxman, the physicist who knew how to operate the chronosphere.
Waxman, Oh, who is this?
His name is Jom. Jom, this is Dr. Charles Morin.
I know the doctor.
I don't believe we've met.
In my business, I have to know a lot of people I've never met.
Jom is security.
I see.
He's going with us.
To see there's no mistake.
That's right, Doctor.
Very well. I don't suppose murderers can be choosy about their companions.
Before we go any further, here are some clothes that will be suitable to the time and place, which is our destination. Please put them on, Doctor.
While you're changing, I'll give you some background on the subject. Born in Germany, 1879. German citizen, religion Jewish. Became a Swiss citizen after graduation from Zurich Polytechnical Institution. Later migrated to the United States after Adolf Hitler came to power with a price set on his head by the Nazis. Nobel Prize for Physics, 1921. Copley Medal, 1925. Franklin, 1935. Personal habits...
Must we do this?
He's only doing his job. Go on, Jom.
Personal habits. Works in a bare room with only a pencil and paper. Enjoys sailing, smokes a pipe... Never drinks, is a violinist of consummate ability.
All right, I'm ready.
Good.
Now just strap yourself into the accelerator seat. Ready? Switch on. The sensation will be something akin to weightlessness, a disorientation and feeling of utter detachment. This will last until we have settled into a new orbital configuration. We will be able to monitor our time segment on the screen before us.
May I ask our objective?
Yes. The Polytechnicum at Zurich. Graduation ceremony in the year 1900.
So young.
He was already formulating the theory of relativity at this point, Doctor. We have no choice. It must be clean and thorough. Are you ready, gentlemen?
Yes.
Ready, Professor.
Hold on. We will begin to whirl until we reach speeds where K-meson penetration is possible. Now.
The sensation was unlike anything I'd ever experienced. I felt bodiless, weightless. My consciousness seemed to float free. I was dimly aware of Waxman at the monitoring controls, but otherwise I remember no sensation. Later he told me that it took exactly 1.5 hour to vector in on the right time and place. That was right after the whirling stopped.
Marin, are you all right?
Yes, I think so.
John, I'm all right.
Where are we?
According to the monitor, our barge is at a dockside on the Lake of Zurich. The year should be 1900. The time is 2:00. We have exactly 1 hour to accomplish our mission. Open the hatchway, John. Well?
Fantastic. A different world.
We can't waste any time. The graduation ceremony is at 3:00. Now let's go.
Very well.
Just a moment, gentlemen. Here, take these.
What are they?
Guns. We'll need them.
We stepped ashore. It was strange to see the world green and happy again after our red radioactive ruins. Eventually, we located a policeman who spoke some English. He directed us to the auditorium of the Zurich Polytechnical Institute where the graduation ceremony was in progress.
Don't attract much attention. Take a seat in the rear.
And now, it gives me great pleasure to present the diplomas of graduation to the members of the graduating class of the Zurich Polytechnic Institute. First, Mr. Hans Kindler, cum laude.
Do you see him, John?
Not yet.
Next,
we will have to wait until they call him to the platform.
Mr. Heinrich Weiss, valedictor.
Are you ready?
Barbara Müller.
Marin, you're the one who must do this. Are you ready?
What? Oh, yes. Yes, I am. I'm ready.
Mr. Albert Einstein.
That's him.
Marin, shoot. Shoot.
I can't do it. I can't.
Give me that gun.
Come on. We've got to get out of the barge. Now hurry.
Another few minutes.
What do you suppose it will be like?
What?
Our world, the one we left. Without atomic fission, I mean.
We'll soon know.
Well, one thing is for sure. There'll be no mass destruction. The people will be there.
The people. Good Lord, there'll be billions of them.
And the trees, the green shrubs, and the beautiful tall buildings. He looked very young.
We're vectoring in on our year. Now hang on when I start the negative penetration. Brace yourselves. According to calculations, we should be back in the East River on the same day we left. The world will be as it would have been if Einstein had never existed. Open the hatch, John. Look at that.
The city. New York is whole again. No ruins, no rubble.
Those buildings are magnificent. Look at the trees and the parks. Marlon, we've done it. It was worth it. We've done it.
Yes. We've done it.
Suddenly from nowhere, an official boat, a police boat. Suspicious of the barge and our parachronin penetration equipment, we were arrested by federal agents. The barge and our time machines confiscated. We were drugged, tortured, questioned interminably. It went on for what seemed like days and weeks. Finally, when they decided that they had had every shred of information we possessed, we were taken before a huge, beetle-browed man who seemed to be a combination scientist and civil authority.
Sit him down. Well, Dr. Maron, we seem to have exhausted the possibilities. Tell me, is there anything you and your companions wish to tell me before you're disposed of?
Disposed of?
A euphemism for murdered.
Murdered? Why, what have we done?
You haven't done anything yet, but you have a thorough knowledge of nuclear physics, fission reaction, hydrogen bombs, etc.
Lord, you mean you have the knowledge we tried to keep from you? You got it from us ourselves?
Don't flatter yourself, Doctor. We've known the principles of nuclear reaction ever since Kretschwood.
Kretschwood?
The Brazilian scientist, discoverer of the equation E equals MC squared.
I see. Then, well, why are you going to destroy us?
Because, my friend, you're too dangerous. You know too much. Information could leak to our enemies. Important principles.
Enemies?
Oh, yes, yes, yes. I forgot. You have no knowledge of contemporary affairs. Beneath this building, deep in the earth, there is a thorium pile going.
Thorium? U-235?
Would be better, yes. Our scientists are working that out. The problem of separation and so on. It's a highly secret project, naturally. We call it only by the name Manhattan Project.
Manhattan? Oh, no, it couldn't be. It's too coincidental. Yet I see it's true. You're going through exactly the same steps. In a year, you'll have an atom bomb. Then soon after, a hydrogen bomb. Then intercontinental missiles, and then...
You seem to have great powers of prophecy, as well as great scientific knowledge.
My friend, did you ever hear of a man named Einstein? Albert Einstein?
Einstein? No. I never heard of him.
Then the futility of it struck me. The futility of trying to place the guilt of all of us on any one man. The futility of trying to do something worthwhile by evil means. And finally, the futility of trying to murder an idea. As they led me to the execution cell, where I now wait, the words of a man whose books were destroyed in the war rang in my brain. The fault, dear Brutus, lies not with our stars, but with ourselves.
Fred Collins again. I'll have another word about X minus one in just a moment. How you feel, blue and miserable with a deep-down cold? Listen.
Every second someone takes it for the miseries of a cold.
Millions more take bromoquinine.
Every second someone takes it for the miseries of a cold.
Bromoquinine.
More people have taken more bromoquinine cold tablets for more complete relief than any other cold tablet ever sold. You could use aspirin or cough syrups or nose drops all day and not get bromoquinine's relief. Bromoquinine works to relieve stopped-up nose, body aches, fever, irregularity, the blues, and headache, too. Yes, more complete relief for even virus colds. For bromoquinine is the only cold tablet sold with wonder-working quinine and five other medicines health-fortified with vitamin C. Remember,
every second someone takes it for the miseries of a cold.
Millions more take Bromo Quinine.
Get Bromo Quinine brand cold tablets. You have just heard X-1 presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, which this month features Kill Me With Kindness by Richard Wilson. What would you do if you found yourself in a place where your every whim was granted? Don't worry. You wouldn't be the first to spoil utopia by attempting to improve it. Galaxy Magazine, on your newsstand today. Tonight, X-1 has brought you Target One, a story from the pages of Galaxy written by Frederick Pohl and adapted for radio by George Lefferts. Featured in our cast were Joseph Bell as Dr. Marin, Frank Silvera as President Malkov, Dean Almquist as Professor Voxman, Al Collins as Jom, Guy Repp as the official, with Charles Webster. This is Fred Collins speaking. X-1 was directed by George Boutsas and is an NBC Radio Network production.
X-1 on Tuned to Yesterday from the 26th of December 1957 on NBC. And that wraps up this hour of science fiction on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden era. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for tuning in.